Blog Talk Radio.
Do you believe in the concept of an independent diaspora nation state for the descendants of the transatlantic slave trade, the biggest crime in the history of humanity? Are you tired of black African people being scattered across a diaspora, living as second and third class citizens in foreign lands? Should black African people have their own Israel? If you believe and support any of these positions, check out the BAIO social network on Ming. People with various thoughts and opinions on reality coming together with like mind toward a singular goal and common denominator, land, infrastructure, and nationhood. Visit BAIOAfricStand5.ming.com. That's BAIOAfricStand5.ming.com. Black African power and a Bibi Fahodie. Total African liberation. Peace.
Is this what you want to be their entertainment, their playthings? Their pets, cowering beneath a whip, and then fighting amongst ourselves. Is this what you want?
I've lived by their rules my entire life. I've protected them, envied them. And for what? To be treated like an animal.
We are not animals! We do have a choice! We can choose to be more than this! We can be slaves! Or we can be!
You are now listening to 13 Revolution on the BAIO Radio. Here is your host, Minister Dawood Mohammed.
The views and opinions of the host do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the BAIO, the Black African Infrastructure Organization.
Do you believe?
Where I was born, nothing is promised. My life is filled with less hope than the prophecies and those Nostradamus. Omega marks the ending of predictability, birth of agility. Who will it be to test me and expose its utility? Iron like a lion from Zion, stop trying so hard. I think I smell your brain cells frying. The family's behind you if you're worthy. Philosophy developed deep in the back streets of Dirty Jersey. Troops with Kelly hats and Timberland boots. No more breakdancing for loops. Niggas hustling and shoot. In the Garden State, it grows stink weeds and criminals. Government funds are minimal. Offense is subliminal.
These days, it's hard for we to find peace of mind. Between insanity and sanity, there lies a thin line. Some dwell in hotels with Jezebels of Stone Age and fall a victim to the plague. Unclean, bad dreams of why cleft being a fiend. One last kiss from my sweet serpentine. Eliminate, break, navigate to rejuvenate. Thoughts of suicide with my nickel plate. Reconciliation came from my enemy friend who said family don't bend. We stay solid to the end. Now who would think that your best friend would be your worst enemy and your enemy your best friend? Stare into the air, inspiration from the atmosphere. I think of old ghosts that ain't even here, like Alex Haley. Take notes of this biography. My family tree consists of street refugees. A ghetto land where we talk slang. Stolen cars bang like my titty bang bang. Shebang fed the head. We ain't selling cocaine today, so refrain and let my family reign. Okay.
Just walking the streets, death could take you away. It's never guaranteed that you see the next day. At night, the evil armies of Satan don't play. So defend the family, that's the code to obey.
But if I fall asleep and death takes me away, don't be surprised, son, I wasn't put here to stay at night. The evil army of Shaitan on play. So the family sticks together and we never betray.
Yo, 52 pickups, no cops around. 50
have the money ready. I smell something fishy. Your wife in my custody wants for a smoke. You find a body in the street. That's the voice of the kid. That's the kidnapper. I do my work and then I catch my ticket to Jamaica. Meet me in the alley. Make sure you bring the money. This ain't the 70s. I'm far from a jack turkey.
My circle, it can't be broken. Open cut, don't it provoke it. Ragged, promoting, don't get choking. All their words like smoking. Cause we saw smoking. Doesn't mean that we forgotten. Your booty smell rotten. And one day you will be gotten. See, jokers is scatterbrained. They focus is unrestrained. My army is trained. You never find us sleeping in vain. Cause I seen fire and I seen rain. You claim fame while modest niggas remain. I can judge a character like Edo judge a verdict. And if you bring a threat, I give you sex if I ain't heard it. You poppin' shit about your attitude and how you word it. I seen the biggest niggas on the block get murdered. And they deserve it. But so the beef said when they served it. That shit is nervous. So what's my purpose, family? We must deserve it. Your numbers be tired. I hope you like the hell by you. You been screaming murder. She wrote like Shaka Demons and fly.
Just walking the streets, death could take you away. It's never guaranteed that you see the next day. At night, the evil armies of Shaitan don't play. So defend the family, that's the code to obey.
If bosses fall asleep and death shake me away, don't be surprised, son, I wasn't put here to stay. At night, the evil armies of Shaitan don't play. So the family stick together and we never betray.
We used to jump rope, but now we gun hope. Busting shots off of Project Rooftop, sending signals with the blood smoke. Ock, don't talk a lot if you can't hold it in lock. If you think lips sing shit, imagine four Glock clips. I hold a glass of Remy Martin, getting milk by the cartons, extorting the lightweights for thinking they important. The night pays in heavenly ways, ain't nothing free, guys. Knowledge in your family and step into your B-I-U-C-I. Stay on top of shit like a fly, my niggas reach. When we got beef, then jet down the South Beach. Your mouthpiece is yapping, I hear it in your rapping. My family is sick, so that bullshit can never happen.
Just walk in the streets, death could take you away. It's never guaranteed that you see the next day. At night, the evil army and Shaitan don't play. So defend the family, that's the code to obey.
If I should fall asleep and death take me away, don't be surprised, son, I wasn't put here to stay. At night, the evil armies of Shaitan don't play. So the family stick together and we never betray.
Real talk, family business. That is so appropriate.
You know what you say? Lord the mother, y'all. Punch.
Say that. Assalamu alaikum. Hotep. Peace. Black African power. It's your host once again, Brother Minister Daoud, bringing the 13 Revolution Experience to DAIO Radio. As you can see, fired up, coming to swing, coming right out the gate. I'm so grateful to all to be back here once again, one week after the other. So there's no layoff, there's nothing to apologize, there's nothing to say I missed anything because I'm here as I was last week. Grateful to Allah to be a part of the BAIO, which brothers and sisters stands for the Black African Infrastructure Organization. Our philosophy, motto, credo that we live by, the glue that binds us together as a family, can be encapsulated in three words and one question. We live by the concept of land, infrastructure, and nationhood, affectionately known as LIM, and we ask the question, what is the end game? Land. All black nationalists know that black people need land, must acquire land. All of your teachers from the conscious community talks about having land, some acquired it, some didn't, but everybody acknowledged that true freedom cannot start without, number one, having land, infrastructure. This is kind of new to some people, and we don't want to be condescending about it, but we want to break it down. Infrastructure is that which runs the bare bones, the backbone of any city, state, and nation. Infrastructure being your sewage system, your electrical system, your grid, your information highway, your highways, your transportation system, everything that makes your water supply, everything that makes day-to-day life work, that we take for granted, but you could not live without an infrastructure. If you are a nationalist, if you say you want to build a nation here, or if you say you want to build a nation elsewhere, you are not serious unless you are serious about controlling and maintaining infrastructure. If you want to build in Ghana, you need infrastructure. If you want to build in Senegal, you need infrastructure. If you want to build anywhere on the continent, anywhere in America, if you don't control infrastructure, you do not have true I'm sorry, I have a speakerphone on. You do not have true nationalist autonomy, and you are just pissing in the wind. Nationhood. Nationhood is when you have one and two, and your flag is flying. You have a place that you can pay homage to. You have a place that you can have loyalty to. The policies are in your best interest. The place is run by people who look like you. The gods, the culture, the icons, the actors, and everybody that you look up to all looks like you, and people in positions of power that control things look like you, then you have true nationhood. Not a second before and not a second after. And I say again, when everybody who controls things and is in true positions of power looks like you, then you have true nationhood, not a damn second before or a second after. Let me calm down here for a minute. And so therefore, brothers and sisters, I'm truly overjoyed and grateful to Allah to be here today to have this particular show once again. I originally was going to reschedule it on Sunday, and I just, you know, it did some things like, you know, you're by yourself, and I guess certain, you know, for me being an artist and being a public speaker, like, pictures come into my mind and they come down and I see the whole thing. And I've been doing radio for so long that a full show will come down in my mind and I will see it when I'm really inspired. And today this thing came down and drove, so I got to get it out. Anyway, brothers and sisters, let me read the monologue. And brothers and sisters, those of you from the BIO, if you can hear me, please comment and tell me that you can hear me. If not, tell me what I need to adjust. Okay, monologue. When a group of women and men that is strong in their principles gets attacked, it is often seen as a misfortune. However, it is not. In fact, attack, stress, and pressure are blessings in disguise. It helps you to understand what needs to be tightened up and who needs to either tighten up or who needs to go. Nationhood is the final frontier. We need no distractions or division. Preach what you practice. I want to say it again. It helps you understand what needs tightening up and who needs to either tighten up or go. Nationhood is the final frontier. We need no distractions and or division. Preach what you practice. Yeah. So, brothers and sisters, listen. I'd like to draw an analogy, and this will be the foundation of what we're going to talk about today. All right? If I could, hopefully you allow me to do that real quick. Okay, so, you know, across the health diaspora, as you would call it, the biggest thing within the last, I think, 10 years, maybe 15 years, have been the encouraging of black people, people in general, but black people specifically in the conscious community, to go vegan. And we are all pretty much nervous and scared about cancer. We are all pretty much looking at it as a specter over us. We've all lost people in our lives, loved ones, things like that, to cancer. And so be that as it may, people are telling us that the way in which to fend off cancer is to become a vegan and be a vegetarian. Now, here's the interesting thing. In the vegan community, if you are not careful, then you will go vegan and you will still die an early death. I'm going to say that again. In the vegan community and philosophy, if you are not careful, when you go vegan, you can still die an early and even painful death. But that's not really what I want to get into. The crux of what I want to talk about is this. In the vegan philosophy, what you have to understand is there's two different, very stark contrasting philosophies. For your regular vegan that white people are down with, some black people are down with, and people of other nationalities, you are basically eating vegetables. It's a good thing. It's a healthy thing for you. But you know what the core of the philosophy is? The core of the philosophy is basically that you are eating vegetables because cruelty to animals occur when you eat meat. In other words, the vegan community is pro-life, and it is there for you to say that slaughtering animals is cruel, and then they're going to show you cows and how cows are being slaughtered. They're going to show you chickens and how chickens are being grown on a farm. They're going to show you, you know, being locked up in cages and herded together like slaves on a slave ship. They show you all of these things. And these particular particular pictures are supposed to have such a psychological and traumatic effect on you that you're going to have compassion on the animals. You're not going to want them to be slaughtered. Ergo, you're not going to want to eat no more. Okay? And that in and of itself is a kind of, I would say, worthy cause. But here's the true black vegan movement. The true black vegan movement understands that as a melanated individual, you have a different body than everybody else's. Your blood is different. Your bones are different. The way your body transmits signals is different. The way you receive the sun is different. And so your body reacts to meat in a different way. And the black vegan community, headed by those such as Dr. Sabi, Layla Africa, Minister Inky, who I know and love and subscribe to a lot of philosophies, and various different others, you are trying to repair, you are trying to regenerate your true black form. You don't give a damn about animals. What you're trying to do is you're trying to be pro-life, but it's pro-black life. Let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. This nationhood thing, when you really look at it, it is not everybody together. Everybody does not have the same philosophy as a black nationalist. Everybody does not have the same view of nationhood. And what we're finding out is that there's many people who have totally different ideas than we do but try to criticize us for what we're trying to do. So understand this, brothers and sisters. Everybody is not a nationalist and everybody is not a nationhood. There are some people who are for an independent nation. And there are some people who are homesteaders. I liken the vegans who are pro-life for animals to homesteaders. I liken the black eugenicists who use vegan and the vegetarian lifestyle to regenerate the black body and healthy melanin to nationalists. Let me explain. You see, when you simply just want to move to Africa, it's a better place. The air is cleaner. The people are black. It's your continent. You already have a country over there. All you have to do is pay somebody $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and they got a living for you. They got a place where you can live. The internet is already set up for you. You come under somebody else's government. You come under somebody else's flag. You are a homesteader, and you are a vegetarian. That's what you are. But when you want to control your own context, when you want to build it from the ground up, you want to control infrastructure, you want to lay down the pipes, you want to control the electricity as well as the electrical grid, you want to build your own water system, you want to build a super strong information highway. When you look at the movie Captain America Civil War and you see Wakanda, the hairs go up on your back and you start sweating because you know that that's what you wanted all your life, because like my dad said, you always wanted an Israel for niggas. That's what you want. You are black eugenicist and a true black vegan. You see, brothers and sisters, the problem that I'm having today, and what I understand the problem is, because I boggled my mind for a long time really trying to understand what this was all about and what was going down, and what I ended up finding out is this. It's very simple. You see, years ago, my leader and teacher, Honorable Minister Lewin X, taught me that people practice what they preach, and practicing what you preach is an unnecessary burden. You know what I mean by that? Let me explain. When you practice what you preach, it is too late. Because generally, practicing, listen, brothers, this is going to be an explicit show. I know you know I'm the minister, but please forgive me for my language. But this is just where I'm at today. When you practice what you preach, basically, you are now writing checks, you know what I'm saying, that your ass got to cash. In other words, you have already said you do this. We have already said we do that. We have already said we're involved in this and that. And so because of that, at the end of the day, what we do now is we have to live up to what we already said. Kind of like Rex Ryan of the Buffalo Bills, who used to be Rex Ryan of the New York Jets, a man that says, this year we're gonna make the Super Bowl. This team is going to be competitive. We're going to throw 35 touchdowns, and we're going to sack 50,000. And you make all of these bold predictions and bold statements, and then your team now has to go cash the check that your mouth has written. accept that you're in trouble. That gets a lot of people mad at you. That puts a lot of people at unnecessary odds with you. And when we do that, because I can be guilty of it sometimes, and I'm learning to control it. You need to learn to control it. We all need to learn to control it. But when we do that, it disappoints a lot of people. It wears down your credibility. It makes you look like you're all mouth and no action. And so the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to us in our lesson, he asked the question, have you not learned that your word shall be bombed regardless of whom or what? And the answer is, yes, my word is bond, and bond is life, and I will give my life before my word shall fail. And I say again, my word is bond, and bond is life, and I will give my life before my word shall fail. So understand this, brothers and sisters, as we move on through this. If your word is bond, and your bond is life, then what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is saying to you in simplicity is that your word binds you to your deeds, and your deeds give you your name, your vocation, and everything about you, your family, your children, your estate, it gives it life. When you don't have action to back up your word, then you, your family, your children, your estate, and even your name is death, and people look at you as a dead person because you cannot keep your word, I can't keep my word, we can't keep our word, and there's no life there. And so therefore, wouldn't it be better to flip it around? Wouldn't it be better to preach what you practice? Wouldn't it be better to first practice something and then talk about it? Wouldn't it be better to first accomplish things and then talk about them? And wouldn't it be better to first affirm and do and then brag about it? You see, brothers and sisters, you know, we look at these current events that's going on now, and you look at these two gentlemen that's been shot down in North Carolina. And what's funny about these incidents, if there's anything that's funny, because there's nothing funny about the incident and the person dying, it's actually sad and horrifying, and it makes a lot of us angry. But thing is, the reaction of nationalists to things like this. Nationalists come out the woodwork when a brother or a sister is shot and killed by white policemen or even black policemen. And your answers to to these particular incidents says a lot about you. I'm going to say that again. Your answer and solution to these particular incidents says a lot about you. And what it says to a lot of us is what side you fall on. Are you a vegan or are you a black vegetarian? What are you trying to do? Is your answer to these shootings homesteading, or is your answer to these shootings nationhood? Because if your answer to these shootings is homesteading, then you must stop calling yourself a nationalist, and you must now say that you are either a black power American, a militant integrationist, or a Captain America Negro. Now, I know that you don't want to be called that. It sounds derogatory. It's something that Hollywood made up, and, you know, that's not really what we are. But that is what you are. That is what you are. And here's the worst part about it. The worst part about it is when you are that, you turn around and you have no tolerance for anybody that doesn't see it the way you do. Because when we see a shooting, we see a murder, we see the cop get off, we do not want to be a part of the system. We do not want to try to change the system. We want to build our own system. And isn't that what nationalists mean? Doesn't nation mean something that you have yourself? And if this is somebody else's nation, and remember, I don't care who you are and how narrow-minded you are, you must remember that you are outnumbered in this country by the Caucasian man. And so therefore, if this is not your country, and you know damn well it is, I don't care how much so-called history you try to recite and other stuff like that, then quite frankly, if you are suggesting that the answer to this is a political process to build something right here, then what you are is a black homesteader. What you are is a black, is a quote-unquote, save the animal, pro-life vegetarian, and what you really are is a black power American and an integrationist. Not to drop the mic right there, can I? Oh, but I'm not gonna. You see, let me give you a little story, brothers and sisters. Back in the day, you know, I've been doing this Nation of Islam thing for now 24, 25 years. And back in the day, when I first came around to the Nation of Islam circles and came into the temple, the mosque back in those days, it took me like a year and a half, almost 2 years to become a lieutenant. I was young, I was hot-headed, I was emotional, and it took my teacher a long time to kind of straighten me out and chop off all of the ends. I was a young kid coming out of Brooklyn, didn't really have a lot of polish on me, was intelligent, had been to school, and was very proud of it for no damn reason. And quite frankly, I needed a lot of help, a lot more help than I thought I needed. And eventually he got me to a place where I could actually function and lead. I was always faithful. I was always dedicated, but I still had, you know, some issues. So anyway, you know, at the end of the day, here's what happened. Finally, they put me on a post as an officer. And, man, I could not wait to have some kind of authority and for men and women to actually see me as an authority figure and for men to come to attention when I came through. And, you know, this is the kind of vanity that you go through as a younger man. But either way, here's what ended up happening. While I spent my year and a half not being an officer, I spent the whole time watching other people and seeing what they did that I would do different. Watching other people and seeing what they did that I would correct. If I ever got power, where what I would say, what I would do, how I would straighten them out, you know what I'm saying? This is not right. This person does this wrong. I can't believe they do that. The book says this. The book says that. And the book says this. And what ended up happening, man, was in the beginning, the brothers were happy because they knew I was the most faithful there. But, man, once I took that office, everybody started hating me. And you know why? The reason why everybody started hating me is because all I could do was try to be better than everybody else and use the law to show them that they needed a lot of work done. You know what I'm saying, brothers and sisters? It was kind of like I was using my position as a bully pulpit to lord over and frown on other people. And that is kind of sort of what a lot of us do today. We try to use who we are and what we do as sort of a high horse against other people. And the funny thing about it is that all you need is one good fall. All you need is one good mishap to knock you off that high horse, and you're setting yourself up for a huge failure. And a lot of people don't understand this. Malcolm X was like that. Khalid Muhammad was like that. And said other people were like that. They were men that were strong, hardcore disciplined, but Malcolm had very low tolerance for anybody else that didn't have this, the level of discipline that he had. And what I'm saying to you today, brothers and sisters, is that there's no place to go but down, so we all have to really, really put the time in. We all really have to put the time in to learn that it's not about practice what you're preaching, because practice what you preach is dead wrong. We must learn today not to practice what you preach, but we must learn to preach what you practice, because it's the only way to establish credibility. We'll be back.
Bye-bye. So come on, homeboys, you can all get some while I bust this break on my limb drum. start to now. I've toured all around the USA, and when it comes to MCing, there's one thing to say. I'm the top of the list when it comes to this.
Man, I can tell you, brothers and sisters, I can really tell you that, you know, when I listen to that, you may say, why in the hell would he play something like that? What does that have to do with this? That is hip-hop from the early 80s. I refer to this era as BC, 1980 BC. You know what BC stands for? Before crack. And quite frankly, when you listen to hip-hop from that day, I spent the whole day listening to this kind of hip-hop. Curtis Blow, 8 Million Stories, Jekyll and Hyde, AM to PM, you know, Ace Wonder from Sugar Hill Gang, Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five, like, you know, and I'm going to play some more. And what you hear in there is you don't hear all of the murder, you know, killing crack stuff that you hear that has, you know, basically started infiltrating rap somewhere around the 90s and lives to today. And don't get me wrong, that's a part of my history and a part of my life also. It's a part of black life, period. But you have to, if you go back to that era, and maybe you need somebody that was born in that era, and they will put you up on that kind of hip-hop, you can hear a difference. You can hear a man and a woman rapping about wanting to live a better life, rapping about wanting to just have fun and stuff like that. And, you know, the late 80s brought a more conscious hip-hop, but you can start to see the sun go down. You can start to see kind of a spirit in which, you know, things got really drastic and it was survival of the fittest and everybody was for themselves. And if you listen to the texture of it, you just don't hear that kind of desperate darkness that comes after crack, AC. So anyway, brothers and sisters, let's get on with the get on here because as you can see, it's in me today and I have to get it out. So preach what you practice. Let me ask you a question. If you really about nationhood, then why the hell do you use the names Pookie and Ray Ray? If you really about nationhood, then why the hell do you use those kind of names? And you don't have to use Pookie and Ray Ray, Shaniqua, Raheem. You use these names derogatorily. See, me, brothers and sisters, I got an Arabic name, and my government name is Arabic. So I could never make fun of somebody else's name, ever. But people use these names. I remember somebody called into my radio show a while ago, some brother, and seemed like a well-meaning brother, but then he says, I just can't do it with Pookie and Ray Ray. And I know who you got that from. But if we're going to talk about preaching what we practice, let's go over this nationhood concept and see if you're a homesteader or if you're for nation. From what my studies tell me and all the people around me, and the people around me being Ivy the Queen, Salima Samad, Forever Queen the Farmer, Brother Collar, Brother Holip, Chef Rob, Earl Hardaway, Brother Dev, Max 611, Roger Fairley, Brother Thomas, Jonathan Hill. All of these brothers and sisters will agree that a nation is a vast complex network of some, a vast complex network and the sum of many small moving parts. Do you need to hear that again to see what side you're on? It's a vast complex network and the sum of many small moving parts. See, I talked about this at Muhammad's Temple number 13 like maybe 3 weeks ago. You see, brothers and sisters, scientists understand that the universe itself on a cycle, but the universe itself is the sum total of many small micro individual cycles. Do you understand what I'm saying? See, when I talk about cycles, I talk about a beginning, an ending, and a beginning again perpetually, which causes growth, which causes development, and in some cases, which causes regeneration and which causes decay. But either way, the universe is a sum total of cycles. The world you live in is a sum total of cycles, and likewise, your body is a sum total of many millions of little cycles. And so therefore, within those cycles, you have processes, and processes have an outcome. See, brothers and sisters, people pride themselves on what they eat from. You know what I mean by that? When I say people pride themselves on what they eat from, what I'm saying is that people pride themselves on what they do for a living. But see, I say eat from because you don't like that, and you limit that to a job. It could be a business. It could be a job. It could be a hustle. Who knows? All I know is that your family eats from it and you eat from it too. And people pride themselves on that. This choice of profession comes from how, this is listen very closely. People's choice of profession comes from how their brain is spiritually and emotionally wired. So what you eat from, it generally comes from how your brain is spiritually and emotionally wired. And what I mean by that is this. There are certain professions that require a certain emotional temperament. And there are certain professions that will require a certain spiritual understanding and awakening. And you may try to separate spirituality from business and spirituality from income, but your ancestor didn't, I don't, and you know damn well you don't neither. So in other words, your understanding of life, your understanding of the higher power, and your understanding of yourself lends itself to what you do for a living and what you eat from. And if you think that's not true, go ahead and take a heavy task. If you go and you take a heavy task that's above you, your spirituality will either empower you to deal with that heavy task or it will cancel out your ability to deal with that heavy task, moron. And so therefore, your emotional, what's called wiring and temperament also determines that also. Because I did talk to people all the time who say, brother, I ain't got to do it. I really don't have temperament to be around them crackers in the office. I'll haul up and slap the shit out of somebody. And I'd be like, brother, that's almost me every day, but I can deal with it. You know what I just said? Did you hear what I just said? What I just said is that's temperament. That's your ability to deal with other people. That's your ability to tolerate other people. And that's your lack of ability to tolerate other people. So if your choice of profession, if people themselves pride themselves on what they eat from, and people's choice of profession comes from their brain, how their brain is spiritually, emotionally wired, then people's wiring comes from either their upbringing or their emotional and spiritual circumstance. I'm going somewhere, brothers and sisters. I'm going somewhere. People's wiring comes from either their upbringing or emotional slash spiritual circumstance. Then what does that mean? That means that generally, if a brother or a sister is in a quote-unquote pooky ray-ray situation, that means that somehow, some way, they had an emotional or spiritual circumstance that put them in a situation where they're in a pooky ray-ray circumstance. Don't you think? But let me hit you with something real quick from what I know. Because, again, I'm a minister, and yes, I'm a real minister, have a congregation, have had a standing congregation, and now rebuilding a congregation. Also, I work in the community, so I work in a fatherhood group that, you know, has basically people, some people from the professional world, some people from the streets. But everybody's coming to straighten themselves out and get their life better. And I walk the streets with flyers, with papers, with food, and stuff like that. So I have dealt with people from all sorts, all walks of life. And this is why I say, as a nationalist, that you have to preach what you practice, because if you have not been exposed to the full spectrum of black people that is out there, you can't really speak on it. You can't really speak on it. And when I say you have been exposed, I don't mean talk to or talk about somebody. I mean you got down in the dirty mud and you helped somebody out of a poverty situation. You helped somebody out of a jail situation, and you helped somebody out of a domestic and really ratchet family situation. Figure deal me. And so therefore, what I'm saying to you is this, brothers and sisters, having had that kind of, I would say, spiritual sample, here's what I know. You know something? Sisters and brothers who never, you know, who've never been locked up and basically are used to working jobs, you know, unfortunately, brothers and sisters, a lot of sisters and brothers who are used to working jobs and never been locked up, they have an inborn fear of going on their own. You know what I mean by going on their own? What I basically mean is that most brothers and sisters who work for somebody else are talented enough and brilliant enough to go out there, get their own, create their own business and go on their own. But they've been working for the man for so long and are comfortable working for the white man for so long that going on their own is a terrible, frightening proposition to them, because they are used to receiving a check and they have been conditioned themselves. We have conditioned ourselves to go to work, do what's needed, stay within the confines of the rules, never upset anybody, you know, regulate yourself when you do, and you receive a check as a reward for your compliance. And when you live that kind of life, when somebody comes along and they tell you, they say, hey, you know, you have the talent, you have the ability to do your own thing. You know, they look at you like you're crazy, B. They're like, what you talking about? I got it good here. Why should I mess that up? And why should I mess up the check that's coming to me? And you talk to brothers and sisters. And out of their mouth, I'm going to get a check. This is a check. Keep cutting the check. Even Ja Rule, as supposedly an independent person of Murder, Inc., was seen at a BET award saying, cut the check, cut the check. Everybody is talking about getting some damn check. So it would be hard for people to go independent. And it would be hard for people to go autonomous who are used to receiving a check from the white man. But here's an interesting paradox. Do you know that sisters and brothers who have been locked up, who do have a record, who did report to a PO and pissed in some kind of cup and had their urine verified and have been in the yard, have been up top and have been, you know, stuff like that, have been in the shower and had to worry for their life or whatever. Let me tell you something, brothers and sisters, what you don't know, because you don't have that sample set. These brothers and sisters are the most ferocious when it comes to getting something for themselves. You mean, if you're dealing with the dude who's on the block and he's going to stay on the block or whatever, you know, I can understand your frustration with him. I can understand you not wanting to do anything with him and her, because there's a lot of hers out there too. But what about that brother or sister who they don't want that no more? What about that brother or sister who they don't want the block no more? They don't want that life anymore. You know what I learned about these brothers and sisters a long time ago? These brothers and sisters, they are ferocious when it comes to doing for self. They don't give a damn. They'll file a DBA in a minute. They'll turn money over. They're always thinking about popping, popping dollars and flipping money. That's what they think about. And quite frankly, I need a certain amount of people who are felonated around me to motivate me to go on my own. And I'm not even going to lie to you. I'm not even going to hold you. I need a certain amount of brothers like that around me, because what I know is they don't give a damn about working for the man. They could care less about working for the white man. Their main goal is to do something for themselves, because if they try to apply to work for the white man, they're going to get a dub. They're going to tell them, you got a record, you can't work here. And who the hell wants to fill out an application where on the application it's already telling you you're screwed by saying, if you have a felony, please fill out this line right here. And what I know about brothers and sisters, again, if they on the streets and they don't want to get off the streets and they shooting guns and gangs or whatever, I can understand you not want to work with them. But me, I still kind of got love for them kind of people, because they've always accepted me and I don't live that life. It's something about me that they like. I don't know what it is. You know what I'm saying? But either way, but man. A brother or sister who've been in jail for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, maybe even 10 years, and they don't want that life no more, man. And they come out here and they don't want to settle for no $8 an hour job. They want to really, really do it as big as they did it when they were selling drugs or robbing people or whatever. Them as the brothers and sisters, they will add nothing to become independent. They will step over you. They will step over your mama to become independent. And what I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, is this. You brothers and sisters who listen to You Know Who, and you get your Pookie and Ray Ray stuff from him, and you like that, and that makes you feel good, and it makes you feel like you big and above everybody else, you need to practice, preach what you practice, be. You really do. Because, quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, you and him don't know what the hell you're talking about, number one. And number two, listen, brothers and sisters, you want to talk about going independent and building a nation of your own? Do you understand that the brother or sister who has never been to jail, never been locked up, will be really apprehensive to leave his comfortable situation in America? Do you understand that? Do you understand that the brother or sister with a felony has no reason to be here? Have you ever looked at that dynamic? No, of course you haven't, because you never was out there. And because your nose is so turned up with a damn pink clothespin on it that you cannot see that these brothers and sisters have untapped potential. And quite frankly, when it comes time to move, who do you think is rolling out first? I'm asking you, who do you think is rolling out first? Think brother or sister with a six-figure job is rolling out first? Do you think brother or sister with a seven-figure job is rolling out first? Or do you think it's going to be the man or the woman who is so has so much of a record, a huge rap sheet, and they're sorry for what they did, but now they can't change it? Do you understand what it means to have a record and it never gets expunged? It never goes away? You now have to live vicariously through your children because you're screwed in the corporate world. But you know where you're not screwed? You're not screwed in the business world. Because in the business world, when you hire yourself, you make your own rules. You employ your own people, and you don't give a damn about your own record. So let me tell you, brothers and sisters, something on that Pookie and Ray Ray stuff. You better know what time it is before you call me again. Because I love the brothers and sisters who have made some mistakes, but see they've made some mistakes and want to turn their life around, because I'm telling you something right now. When it comes time to roll out, they're going to be the first ones to want to roll out. And quite frankly, I am at war with some of these people because they think you suspect as you think that they suspect. And that's real talk. They think that you are suspect while you thinking that they suspect, because they know full well they ain't got no ties here and they're ready to roll out. Do you feel the same way? I'm just asking some honest questions, brothers and sisters. I'm just keeping it 1,000 with you today. I'm asking some honest questions, because if it really comes down to it, and you are preaching what you practice, if you practice nationhood as a genius engineer, a person with social engineering, you are trying to work every available productive element into that society. You are not trying to limit anybody that it can help and contribute in a giant way to that society. And what I'm telling you is this, a brother or sister with a record who really wanted to be an engineer but knows that their record is going to stop them from being, they're going to work 5 to 10 times harder than you to be an engineer. And when you put Pookie and Ray Ray on them, you know what that does? All that does is alienate a section of society that, quite frankly, could have led to good, hardcore, productive nationhood. We'll be back. Nah. Let me back at it. Anyway, yeah. You know, brothers and sisters, so let's talk about this black-on-black crime thing, shall we? Let's do this for a second. All right? Okay, so let me give you a background. Because, you know, two brothers got shot recently by police, murdered, killed, and you know what usually goes down, the present narrative. The present narrative, the kryptonite, the counter strike that's being used when you bring up when you bring up police brutality is what about black on black crime. Now, on my old profile, I used to be connected to a gentleman who's a professor named Ray Winbush. And it was an honor. He's a very intellectual person, very intelligent. Loved that brother, loved his commitment to black people. And he was the first person to put me on to the information. Do you know that whenever a national a national police brutality situation happens, you know, a white man that's a policeman shoots an unarmed black person or a person with their hands up or a person that wasn't a threat, and, you know, it's an unjust death, and then eventually next year they get off. Remember I told you about the three stages before, you know what I'm saying? We don't go into that today. But either way, do you know when that happens, the studies show and the data shows that white people, to justify this and to deal with it in their minds, what they do is they get on the internet and they Google black-on-black crime. Did you know that? Did you know that? So maybe my phone messed up. Because I'd be calling Hollis Show, man, and my phone be dropping, my internet spotty. So let me say that to you again. Did you know that every time they murder one of ours and it becomes national, to deal with it, a large number of white people get on the internet and Google black-on-black crime to deal with it? Did you know that? Isn't that sick? These are your people, Neil. These are your friends. These are your buddies. These are the ones that's not really the cause of it, because it's the ones that's up in power, right? It's not really a white thing or a black thing. It's a power thing, and the people in power are doing it. But the people in power, nigga, they just happen to be white, though, right? Right? And so anyway, be that as it may, and it sure much is. Let me ask you something. If you're a black nationalist, you believe in nationhood, you believe in what's called an independent nation off the shores of America. Generally, if you're a black nationalist in America, you believe it to be on the continent of Africa, but I'll indulge you if you want it to be someplace else. Maybe you think India is a better place. Maybe you think, I don't know, I've heard this before, by the way. Maybe you think, you know what I'm saying, South America is a better place. Maybe you got some other place that you think it should be. And it is what it is. I'm not here to ridicule you just tonight. But either way, if you're a black nationalist, why the hell are you arguing with white people on social media, at your job, or on the street, or whatever? Why are you arguing about black-on-black crime when one of us gets killed? Can I ask you that question? Can I ask you that question? Why are you? Do I detect a certain level of guilt? Is that what I'm detecting from you? The narrative that y'all are giving into about black-on-black crime, do you know that your anger is showing? And do you know that the attention that you're showing shows that you are practicing what you preach and not preaching what you practice? That's confusing to you, right? I'm jumbling. I'm speaking in hyperbole. You have no idea what I'm talking about. So let me break it down to you, brothers and sisters. See, listen, again, this comes from being in the hood, not of the hood, okay? Okay? So black people in all major cities that I know of, and I've been to many cities, and I'm going to tell you, every time I go to a city, I got to go see the ghetto. It's the FOI in me. I have to go see the ghetto. Everywhere I've been, I went to go see the ghetto. And in all major cities, black people, when a black person shoots another person, let me give you the rundown of what happens. Now, according to white people, when a police person or, you know, a police officer shoots a black person, you know what I'm saying, we all get up in arms and we riot. But when a black person shoots a black person, if you listen to these white people, do you know what the picture that you should draw? Basically, we all sit in our houses, eat our food, rejoice. Everything is lovely. Everything is sweet, right? That's the picture that they're drawing. And you, as a nationalist, a phony nationalist idiot, you ain't got no better sense than to feed into that narrative and try to fight back against it. What is wrong with you? Are you crazy? Do you really believe that? Do you really believe that when a black person shoots a black person, we don't do nothing about it? That we just sit back, you know, and file our toenails and eat chicken? That's what we do? Because I'm going to tell you what I see when it happens. When one black person, not even five, one black person gets killed, you know what I see? I see a whole bunch of candlelight visions. By the way, Christians from the church, conscious community, I see street memorials. Do you know what a street memorial is, Mr. Pookie and Ray Ray? I wonder if you do. But if you don't, let me tell you what a street memorial is. It's usually a shrine built at the exact spot that that person was killed. It usually has liquor bottles. It may have candles. It has a picture of the person. And anything that those brothers and sisters connected to them used to pay homage to that person, which, again, if you trace back our history, got to be somewhere in our indigenous history. But not only that, in every city that I've been a part of, even in Jacksonville, that horrible place, Jacksonville, Florida, they got local organized committees and they got focus groups and daycare centers and places to address these kind of things. So, and I would say to you categorically, there is not one city I've been to that doesn't have this. And I say again, there's not one city I've been to that doesn't have this. Now, if you're sitting out there right now and you heard what I said and you said your city don't have it, you're who I'm talking about, because you know why? Your city does have it. You're just so busy being a keyboard revolutionary that you have not gone out into your, you don't know where it's at. You don't know where it's at. You don't. You are so busy banging on Facebook about nationalist issues and black people that you have no earthly idea what's going on to help mitigate and help solve black-on-black crime. But you will get on Facebook and you will argue with these people on the merit that the two are separate and we needed this. I don't be arguing with people on that. You know why? Because my life is dedicated to black-on-black crime, fool. My life is dedicated to black-on-black crime. Every single day of my life, I gave up my entire childhood behind this. So I'm not going to be arguing with the white people on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Blog Talk and social media about how black-on-black crime is worse than police brutality and we don't do nothing about it. You can let Shannon Sharp, you can let Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson, you can let anybody you have out there tell you about, well, we need to work on black crime first. Nigga, did you join us in this yet? Nigga, did you get online? Did you get on the line? Because the line is long. We just had somebody killed out here last week, a young sister. Basically, it was a domestic violence situation. That sister was 17. And, you know, she had infidelity. She cheated on this dude. Dude came right into her house, popped her in the head, boom, right to the temple. Saturday night is going to be a vigil. It's going to be just about everybody from the whole tri-state area who's anybody is going to be involved in it. They're going to be there. I'm going to be there. Do you think Shannon Sharp is going to be there? Do you think Cam Newton is going to be there? Do you think Jerry Rice is going to be there? And this is what I'm trying to tell you. If you don't preach what you practice, if you practice what you preach, you are now writing checks your black ass can't cash. So in other words, you are speaking out on police brutality, but I need to see you at the meetings. And this is the thing, brothers and sisters, I have to say this. I'm not criticizing Colin Kaepernick, but you know what I don't see no pictures of? I don't see no pictures of Colin Kaepernick at no black-on-black crime vigil or no funeral or anything like that. And until I see that, he ain't certified in my book, boy. He's not certified. I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm not saying that what he did was whack or anything like that. But I'm just telling you, when you speak out for black people on police brutality and then you want to turn around with the black-on-black crime argument, I need to see you preach what you practice. I need to see you out there helping to stop black-on-black crime. Because you want to know something? Black-on-black crime is a big problem. It is a problem. But the fact of the matter is that everybody that you see out there fighting against police brutality, that's a flare-up right there. The problem that we face every day is black-on-black crime, you idiot. So when you want to sit there and you want to tell us that we're not doing anything about black-on-black crime, and you as a black person, you join in on that? You join in on that? Do you know how I feel and look at you when you join in on something like that? You're a bitch. Because to me, I'm out there spending my life, risking my life, risking my income and my family trying to help black-on-black crime, and you got the nerve to say we got to work on this? This is something that we got to work on? Nigga, I've been working on this for 25 years. And you got the nerve to sit there and say, oh, you know, police brutality is one thing, but we got to work on black-on-black crime. Nigga, get in the line. Get in the game. Get in the game. Ask the coach to put you in. Maybe you'll receive a pass. Maybe you'll run the ball. I don't know. Maybe you'll block. But until you get in the game, we don't know what position to play you at. We really don't. And so, therefore, I'm going to kick calls in a minute. Brothers and sisters, like, to me, if you join in on a black-on-black crime argument and you ain't been out there, you're a damn hypocrite. And quite frankly, yes, I do agree that the two are separate. They have nothing to do with each other. I do. But I'm not engaging in an argument with somebody about this because that's my life, boy. That's my life. I live that. And I'm not going to let no cracker tell me I'm not fighting for black-on-black crime or I should pay attention to black-on-black crime. I live that. Do you live that? Because you seem to be, you know, you seem to be shuffling around and jiving a little bit with this argument, and maybe they're dislodging you because you're a hypocrite and you ain't got nothing to do with it. And quite frankly, what I'm saying to you today is don't practice what you preach. Preach what you practice. If you are just about nationhood and you're not about black people living a more peaceful and quality life, wherever we are, say that. Say that you're about let's all of us go on someplace else. Say that you're about separation and you don't give a damn about this segment of the black community. Say that. But don't tailor your argument for specific situations and try to act like you down for nationhood when in reality you're not, because when black-on-black crime comes, you ain't got no answer for that and you're not trying to help with it. Because when these crackers come towards me talking about that, I got a rap sheet longer than some of these brothers and sisters got criminal records. Helping to deal with black-on-black crime. And quite frankly, you want to know something before I go to a break, too? Actually, I'm going to have to bring Hollipin. But you know what I'm going to say to you? When I'm out there, and I have the privilege to be out there to fight black-on-black crime, you know who'll be out there helping us, who'll be playing a major role in it? You guessed it, Pookie and Ray Ray. That's real talk. The people who are out there trying to fight black-on-black crime is usually Mr. Pookie and Prime Minister Ray Ray. It is not, you know, Charles Riles III or John. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that person. It's usually them because they have an intimate understanding of it and they work better with it. So, listen, brothers and sisters, if you've been out there, you know, I'm not saying you have to be out there presently, but if you did, you was out there back in the day and you certified, you know, listen, you're a made person. Like, I used to say that all the time, and it's really simple for me, yo. I mean, like, nobody can tell me, oh, brother minister, you didn't do this and you didn't do that and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm certified, boy. I've been out there for decades, and quite frankly, I'm not bragging about it. I'm just telling you because it makes some of us bitter and want to cry. But don't come out here talking that black-on-black crime stuff. And quite frankly, if you are a nationalist, then you shouldn't respond because you should all ready, have that lockdown. We'll be back.
On the corner just a waste of my time. I went to realize there was the king of the rhyme. I got on the microphone and what do you see? Ha, the rest was my legacy. I was born to be the king of the bebop swing. To have stains in my dance, big diamond rings. I own a castle in a yacht, 2 million in gold. Cause rap is a game that I control. I'm like Shakespeare, I'm a pioneer. Because I made rap something people wanted to hear. See, before my reign, it was the same old same. Until the bar with the bar, that street talk game. So if you ever it makes this clear, if you ever think that we're stepping out of here, you ever think you're getting up, down, around, or in, you better think again, my friend, because the door is closed, and we're in town, and the only place you can go is down.
door is closed and we're in town, and the only place you can go is down. You hear what I'm saying? Do you hear that crack violence in there? Do you hear that darkness? I don't. I really don't. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, that was BC. It was before crack. And, you know, I don't know. You get further along in the hip-hop lines and it starts to get darker and more gritty, and it just reflects the devastation that went down in the black community. So when people want to talk about the difference between the music then and now, you can hear it. You know, nowadays what I hear in music is I hear a lot of drugs and a lot of influence of that kind of stuff. Although it talks about parties, it's just not the same, man. It's really just not the same. But you have a right to your music and you have a right to your era. It reflects your era. It doesn't reflect mine. But it's an observation that I see. And this is something that we really have to work on. Anyway, caller from the 347. Is this Holla?
Yes, it is.
Peace, big brother. How you?
Peace, brother. How you doing?
Trying to calm down, but doing well.
Nah, don't calm down. We need to be angry. We need to be passionate.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
I'm thinking, like, somebody on my YouTube channel said, how come every time a black man dies, we talk about it? I'm like, so what, we not supposed to talk about it?
Right.
What, we just going to pretend it didn't happen?
Exactly.
You know?
It's going to go away.
But I wanted to ask the question and just make a few statements. How come there isn't any black on Scandinavian crime in the black community? Like, what about the black on Armenian crime in the black community? You think it might have something to do with the fact that there are no Armenians, there are no Scandinavians, it's just black folks?
Right. Indeed.
There is no black-on-black crime is not a thing. Because if it was a real thing, then you would have to say there's Asian-on-Asian crime. There's white-on-white crime. There's Mexican-on-Mexican crime.
Mm-hmm.
And let's crunch the numbers. Approximately 44 million black people in America. Approximately. America has jailed the most people in a free country in the world. I think they say there's about 2 million people in jail.
Right.
In America. Out of those 2 million people, blacks are disproportionately arrested and convicted and sent to jail and prison. So last time I checked, it was about, you know, I'm subject to being corrected, but the last time I checked, it was about 800,000 black people in jail. So out of that 2 million, almost half is black.
Right.
Now, they say that black folks are the most violent people in this country. That per capita, we commit more crime and most murder and homicides against each other. So let me ask you a question. If black people are killing each other to the tune of 96%, and there's 44 million black people in America, how many of us would be in jail?
Wow. Man, just about
this is a situation, brother, where am I going to say that black folks killing each other is not a problem? No, I won't say that. But if I have some flies in my apartment, do I go and get an AR-15 to kill them?
No.
It's called proportional problem. You know, if you have a problem, you deal with it.
Right.
You know, but the reason why all of this stuff is being the black-on-black crime, and the homosexual agenda, the interracial relationships, the perms versus the wees, the black man versus black woman, the feminist versus the MGTOWs or whatever, this is all distractions. These are all molehills blown up to be bigger than what they are, because what does it do? It keeps people from focusing on what the real issue is, and that's land, infrastructure, nationhood.
Indeed.
And there's another one that they have that they do. This is another technique, and this is not an accident. You've probably been a victim of this too. people will try to take you, Minister DeWu,
mm-hmm.
and make you synonymous with Land Infrastructure Nationhood or the BAIO, because if they can tear you down, then they can tear down the concept.
Yep.
It's not an accident.
Yep.
And you've seen it in motion with me. I mean, you know how it is with
oh,
me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They want to attach me. They want to attack me personally, because if they can attack me personally and tie me to the concept of nationhood, then you tear down nationhood. I tell people all
right.
the time, and I made this point over and over again, I am not King Hollop. I am subject to falling off just like everybody else. And if I do,
mm-hmm.
guess what? Land, infrastructure, nationhood is still
right.
the solution to our problems. So this is bigger
mm-hmm.
than me. It's bigger than you. It's bigger than any individual person. And this is the thing that mm-hmm. angers them, because they don't know how to stop it. And they can't stop
right.
it. Because right now, nationhood is like a snowball rolling downhill, and people don't even realize it. This is the reason why I stay positive and I feel good about the future. I don't have this doom and gloom, misery thing going on where everything is woe is me and black folks ain't crap and they ain't never going to do nothing. I don't sing that.
Right. Right.
Because you just look and see what's going on. Colin Kaepernick started something, and he flushed a lot of coons out of the bushes.
Oh, no.
If
doubt.
You notice, flushed a lot of coons out the bushes. It's getting to the point, the environment is getting to the point now where Negroes are going to have to pick a side.
Yep.
If you notice, you're seeing the celebrities and the athletes, they're being forced to pick a side.
Yes,
do
sir.
You want to stand with your people who's being murdered by the system, or do you want to stand by the system that's murdering them?
Right.
And it's going to be a real tough time for fence straddlers going into the future. I mean, just recently, I don't know if you've seen the thing that Roger had posted in the group. Brothers and sisters rolling up in the churches now.
Yep.
I did.
You know, the chickens are coming home to roost. It's like there's nothing that we can do but except reap the benefits of everything that's happening, because all of these people that's been singing this song about how great America is, or how great we going to do here and we can do it right here and this is our land and all this bullshit,
mm-hmm.
they're being exposed on a daily
mm-hmm.
basis.
Yes, sir.
And it's going to be a point, it's going to reach a point that it's going to get to critical mass, where if you that type of Negro that's out here talking that stuff, it's going to be a bad place for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about that, because we're standing on the right side of history.
Huh.
Me and I was talking with my brother, and we were talking about the youth, and he said he's in full support of whatever the youth is doing, and I said I am too. And I don't feel that people that weren't there for the youth. See, me, you can talk to the youth. I can talk to the youth.
Right.
My brother can, because we dealt with them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't been there, if you haven't seen things from their point of view, if you can't understand their anger, then
mm-hmm.
what cultural critique can you possibly offer that has any validity or relevance?
None at all. The only thing you can do is try to shame them, which is what you keep trying
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, and you see how that works.
Yep.
You know, you sit up here, you was never there, you never stood up, you never gave them anything that they can take into the future, and now you want to question their tactics and their strategies. Let me tell you something. We went through our time, and we went through our way of dealing with this beast. Maybe their way of dealing with it is the better way. Who knows? But that's for them to determine.
Right. Right. Yep. Yep.
Maybe they might yield some results. Who knows? But I know one thing, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Well, we tried everything else.
Indeed, yep.
We tried everything else. Let them try what they feel they need to try. And instead of sitting back critiquing it, support it. Because this is
yep.
what you got to think. If you're having a hard time doing that, elders, so-called elders, let me tell you how you can do it. Realize that you didn't do shit. realize that you left them with absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. See, we had a support system. When we were coming up, there was a slave theater. There was this strong cultural conscious demographic. I won't say community because I just hate saying that.
Right.
There was this demographic. Yeah. There was this demographic that we can go to, and we had all of these teachers, all of these people with knowledge that was teaching us and that we can learn from. Where's mm-hmm. that at now? What do they have? We had John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, Alton Maddox, Khalid Muhammad, all of these different people. And what do they got? Steve Harvey?
Yeah.
Wendy Williams? You know, where's the outlet where they can go to learn something?
Uh-huh. Indeed.
So, you know, I don't want to talk your ear off, but that's basically what I was thinking. It's like we have to understand the only way that you can communicate with the youth of today is you got to understand their pain. You got to understand why they do what they do, why they're frustrated. If you can't understand that and you want to talk etiquette, please get the hell out of here with that etiquette. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Nobody has time for that bullshit.
Yo, I want to get your before we hang up here. I want to get your thoughts on the concept of preach what you practice, because that's the crux of what I've been saying. And I think that, you know, my teacher taught me this a long time ago, and I live by the credo. I, you know what I'm saying, yes, I am a minister, and my job is to uplift, quote-unquote, fallen humanity. But one thing I don't do is I don't be on the rostrum or even in person. You must not fornicate. You fornicating bastards are going to go to hell, all this other stuff. I don't do that. I'm not a moralist.
Right.
I try my best. And that's not to say I don't practice morals, but what it is to say is that anything that I am doing myself, I talk about. What I am not doing, I don't talk about. There's a lot of, in the conscious community, preaching community, Muslim community, they say you have to enforce the law regardless if you live in it or not. To me, that erodes not only my credibility, but it erodes the credibility of the whole brand. So I
yep.
talk about, and what my teacher taught me, well, don't practice what you preach because it's too late. You have already
right.
said it. Now you got to live it. But preach what you practice because that makes it easier for you. What do you think?
Exactly. I agree 1,000%. Because I tell people all the time, I always get put into the conscious man box. And the conscious
right.
man box is, you know, you're asexual, I guess. You have no sexuality attached to that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You like they automatically, you're not supposed to be paid.
Uh-huh.
You know, you got to be broke to be in the conscious
uh-huh.
man. And it's just
uh-huh.
it's just all of this stuff that people want to, because what it is that, and to a great degree, it's the conscious community's fault. I don't want to make
uh-huh.
it seem, I just don't want to put it all on the people to make it seem as if they do. When you paint yourself a certain way, when you paint yourself as super righteous and super pious, when that ain't the real deal,
uh-huh.
you know, people
uh-huh.
look at it and say, well, you know, this is some bullshit. Like, I think it was Dev I was speaking to about this. I love the Million Man March.
Uh-huh.
I loved it because of the people that were there. I believe that
yes,
the brothers that all came there came with the right spirit, and they really wanted
right.
to see a change.
Right.
But
right.
As much as I love the Million Man March, the Million Man March actually was the end of the conscious community.
Huh.
Because when people, like I said before, and I think it was on your show or one or mine, when you can take a $10 or $20 bill and pass it when the basket is 100 yards away, and that $100 makes it into that basket.
Huh.
And you see that everybody there is righteous and everybody's there trying to do the right thing and trying to, and then the organizers who put the damn thing together only see what's in the basket.
Uh-huh.
Then when it's all said and done, the people say, you know, this is some bullshit.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what they did. They rejected every time you come with that. And this is one of the hurdles that the BAIO has to get over.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have been, they had their hearts broken. They went out with their true spirit in the spirit of unity, in the spirit of moving forward and getting something done, and they ran right into another fucking hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, and that, if there's going to be dire consequences for that.
Right.
The universe is going to pay everybody who took advantage of the goodwill and the good spirit of the people. They are going to pay for that. It ain't even got to be us. The universe itself is going to pay them back in ways that we probably will never even know.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was a time where if there was ever going to be any type of mass movement towards something positive, that would have been it. It would have been the perfect stage to kickstart things off. But it was the perfect stage for the one-time gaffle them up.
Yep. The ride to the drive-thru McDonald's, like Ice Cube would say.
Yep. The one-time gaffle them up. And if that's what you can see all of the power and all of the love, and that's what you took out of it, oh, my God, I don't want to be you when that check gets cashed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'll say about that.
Now, we talked about this. We talked about this on your show and mine, but mostly on your show. And, you know, we have a saying in Islam, and it says, die not unless you die the death of a Muslim, which basically means that, you know, the death of a Muslim is supposed to be an easy death, like you die in your sleep or you die peacefully or whatever. But supposedly when you die painfully and slow and it's stretched out and, you know, it's a lot of agony, you know, this is to say that there's something that you deserve. And I think that, you know, I was there for the first Million Man March, and I feel the same way about it that you do. I wasn't there for any others. And I saw all of the money. As a matter of fact, I was a lieutenant and oversaw, you know what I'm saying, a lot of the money. And quite frankly, for all of that to go down and nothing to be done after, you know, and people just tried to like, publish some BS statistics saying crime went down after the Million Man March. Like, what? Because we all
know
Washington, crime went down. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, I remember seeing it like 5 years later. What happened 5 years later? Crime went down. The crime went down basically because of technology and a lot of other things, like affluence occurred because, anyway, we could get into that in another show, because studies will show that in 1995 and before 1995, we as a people were really, really freaking poor. And we're poor now, but if you look at us back in the 60s and the 70s, and, you know, that's one of the reasons why the conscious groups were so full of people, is because, you know what I'm saying, people knew that, you know, most people was poor and the only way out for them was a conscious group. Now, a lot more people got money, and the kind of money the war is, because you always have to choose between resources and liberation, and you got to be a very strong person to choose both. But, yeah, I agree 1,000%. There's definitely a heavy punishment, and you will not die a peaceful death behind that, man. You definitely won't. You know, I was going to get to this, but I guess I couldn't get to it. But what I was going to say in the whole preach what you practice, since I have you there and there's nobody really in the queue with their hands up, I guess the last question I'm going to ask you before you go is this. You know, I think a lot of times people who try to infiltrate the group will come at one of us or come at a bunch of us, and, you know, if I see somebody got beef with you, they're going to get blocked instantly. Before if I don't cuss them out first and then block them. If I see that they got beef with Roger, anybody like that, I'm coming to the defense. And I'm not saying that I'm this big character or whatever, but I'm another guy that has love for my brothers and my sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, to me, I think that you are not preaching what you practice if you're a nationalist and definitely a part of the BAIO when you allow somebody in the circle that is an enemy, or you deal with somebody in the circle, you know, that's not in the circle, that's an enemy. What is your thoughts on that?
Well, let me see if I understand. You're saying if you deal with a person who's an outside agitator and you're in the BAIO?
Yes, like if in a nationalist group, period, because, you know, I just think, you know, and I thought about this long and hard today. You know, we mash on religion in the conscious community, you know, in the Nation of Islam. We look at the Nation of Islam teachings as not necessarily a religion. We look at it as a way of life and your nature.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all mashing on religion and religious people and how they act. But the one thing I think that is good about religion is the closing of the ranks to the point where if you are speaking against Jesus, you know, the whole congregation ain't messing with you. You know what I'm saying? If you're speaking mm-hmm. against, like, you know, Moses as a Jew or speaking against Jews in general, the whole community comes against you. What I think that we are not practicing what we preach in nationalism is when somebody has a problem with one of us, we don't all close ranks against that person.
Oh, you know why?
Why is that?
Because a lot of people identify with the agitator.
There you go.
See, just because a person is, all right, I'll use this as an example. You have a real fine girl, like Jane Kennedy level fine,
mm-hmm.
and she's hanging out with a girl who ain't on her level, maybe like average. But that girl will hang out with Jane Kennedy level girl, be her best friend, roll wherever she goes, and hate her guts.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why she's with her is because that girl gets a lot of male attention. So she knows if I'm with this girl, there's going to be guys around. So let me attach myself to her because I get something out of the deal.
Right.
The whole reason for her being with her is just disingenuous from the gate. And there's a lot of people in our midst that's the same way. They don't really have our backs. And you can tell when somebody outside agitator comes, they don't come in to defend us because they either got their popcorn out to try to see how the fight is going to go, because it's all entertainment for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Or they secretly are, like, vicariously living through the person who's going at us.
Right. Right. Oh, man. That's I didn't even think
about
that.
It's sad, but, you know, it's the truth. It's like, so there's not a lot of people who's really about this, who's really about it. It's a lot of strap hangers.
Yep.
You know? And you can take, this is why I say I don't judge people, because I want to know something. Thank you for reminding me of this. This classism issue in our ranks, where we judging people by your class, what your income level is, and all of this other stuff. Let me ask you, here in America, which class of black people is free of white supremacy?
Not a single one of them.
So here we are, like jackasses, trying to make distinctions between us, where the people in power have no distinctions. They see no distinction between a Henry Louis Gates and a Mr. Holisticism.
Nope.
They don't see any distinctions. Like I tell people all the time, the white man knows us better than we know ourselves.
Yep.
Because we see all of these differences, all this nuance. Well, I'm not that type of black person. I'm this type of black person. Oh, I make six figures. I make seven figures. I'm a professional. You're just a blue collar. All of this bullshit.
Exactly.
But when we look at these stories on the news and we hear about these people getting shot, it stretches across all economic groups, all income levels, all class levels. Why?
Mm-hmm.
All not only that, it stretches across all cultures. You're Caribbean, it doesn't matter. You're African American, it doesn't matter. You're continental African, it doesn't matter. You can get a nice stick shoved up your ass just like anybody else.
Exactly.
So if our enemies can see that they dealing with all one people, what's our fucking problem?
I don't know, man. I don't know. That's kind of what I was trying to say, brother, when I was saying, like, when you want to rule out, quote-unquote, Pookie and Ray Ray and say Pookie and Ray Ray did this and that and the next thing, do you understand what you're saying? You're saying you're not really a nationalist, because a nationalist, a black nationalist, seeks to take black people and form a nation. Nowhere in that description, and I haven't, you know, maybe I haven't been doing this longer than anybody else, but, man, nowhere in that description that I see it seeks to take the elite, the talented tenth, and those who fit this criteria and not that. And like I said before, man, you know, and I guess I can say it a little bit looser than I said it before, I've been around brothers and sisters who got a record and they can't work because the white man won't let them work. And let me tell you something, man. These brothers and sisters ain't joking, brother. They all they thinking about is how they can turn the dollar into $5 the quickest way possible. And they could care less about filing a DBA. They could care less about, you know, they'll go in and get all their tax paperwork or whatever, because in their mind, they got to eat, and they're, what you call, and the white man is blocking them from eating because they got a record. And you could say, well, you did that to yourself, but listen, everybody makes mistakes, and everybody deserves a second, maybe a third chance. And what I know in my lifetime is I've dealt with a lot of brothers and sisters who, you know, it took them 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6 chances, and everybody's telling me, leave that person alone, they ain't this and they ain't that. And you want to know something? On chance number 7, they became the most faithful person I ever dealt with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Because this is the thing that people don't see. I feel like I'm preaching to the choir because you already know this. I judge people by their spirit individually. I look at that person that I'm speaking to and see what I'm dealing with. Because a lot of these highfalutin, what do you call these people? These boule people, these upper the middle class people. Well, if we in a beef, we'll leave you flat.
Word.
The guy who's supposed to be Pookie and Ray Ray will put a baseball bat to a dude because he tried to step to you.
Exactly. Quick. Really quick.
So, you know, I don't go this. Oh, this is another thing, Minister. I'm so tired of people attacking religious people, and I'm not a Christian, but I'm getting tired of seeing these memes where people say "fuck Jesus." Da 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 da. I'm tired of that bullshit.
Oh my God! Yeah, me too.
I'm tired of it. Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to insult your religious beliefs? I think that our platform is perfect. We don't waste our time talking about religion. We start talking about land, infrastructure, nationhood. You can be whatever religion you want to be. Do you agree with that concept? Do you agree with those principles? Can we have a conversation centered around that? That's really the only thing we need to be talking about.
Exactly.
See, but the problem is you got a lot of moralists who are more interested in controlling other people's lives and dictating what they should and what they shouldn't do. And that's the reason why we get caught up in the minutiae of this BS and not concentrating on what we should be concentrating on, which is nationhood. And don't tell me what you ain't going for, Negro. Don't tell me, oh, well, if there's homosexuality, I can't be in it. You in a nation right now with homosexuality, and what you doing about it?
Exactly.
You ain't doing a damn thing. You in a nation right now where you have interracial relationships. What are you doing about it? So don't sit up there and tell me what you ain't going for when you go for every goddamn thing America has to offer.
Hook, line, and sinker. Word up. See, and that's the thing.
No, it just kills me. It's like we got these set of standards that we're going to apply for us, but we don't apply those set of standards for the people that we live in this structure right now. They can do anything, put us in any conditions, and we'll sit there and deal with it and say, please give me more. But when we start talking about having a nation, now all of a sudden it's all of these lines in the sand that can't happen because, oh, I ain't going for that because I can't have a nation because blah, 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 blah. That is what you call bullshit. That's what you call Negro stalling tactics.
Yep.
And people are starting to see it. You talking about you getting excited. Let me calm down.
Oh, no. It's the spirit of the night, bro. I'm gonna ask my astronomer friends what went down because I don't know what happened to me. But anyway, it's like, that's why I ask myself, how in the world did the black movement turn into us against gays or us against – how did it turn into that? How did it turn from us trying to fight oppression and either build our own nation or separate or both? How did it turn into that? Because, listen, I got children, and I will admit on the radio show that I do not want my children to be homosexual because, like Kevin Hart said, I am a heterosexual man, and I do not want my children to be that. That being said, I also – do not want my children to have to experience homosexual education in kindergarten or in grade school or whatever. That being said, if it happens, I'm going to have to deal with it.
Right.
I'm going to have to deal with it. I'm going to either have to take my children out of homeschool or I'm going to have to, sign some kind of quote-unquote petition. And in that case, you mean like if you go and you sign a petition, you might as well give $20, $30, $40 a month to BAIO and help us get this nation. Because quite frankly, that's what you're doing when you sign a petition. What you're saying is you don't like what's going on, and you're still going to stay here and you're going to tolerate it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
And for me, if you're a nationalist, if you want to preach what you practice, if you really practice nationalism, every time you see something you don't like, you should give to or join or be a part of BAIO. Every time you see something you don't agree with, every time one of us gets shot, you should try to go out there and get five more people to come into the BAIO.
Exactly.
If you're a sister and you say that, oh, the black man doesn't protect me, the black man is just like the white man, what you should do is you should go out and get five black men and bring them into the BAIO. Because quite frankly, doing it here in America, what you're admitting is that you're powerless against it, and you're not going to do nothing about it. And if you're not going to do nothing about it, stop talking about it.
Exactly. And another thing is that the BAIO is not requiring anything from you financially. What we're saying is find other people in your state and connect with them so we can get a proper assessment of how many people are actually serious about this nationhood stuff and how many people is really just complaining and bitching and moaning and want to stay here in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'll take it.
Let's get a proper assessment of who wants to go and who wants to establish something and who wants to continue to get their ass kicked.
Yep. Well, brother man, I am very happy that I decided to do this show tonight because this has been a very, very good conversation between you and I. At any given time, we've had anywhere from, you know, we had a couple of callers, some people dropped, and then we got some people that's with us still.
Thank God for archives.
Thank you for coming in. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You are most welcome, brother.
Beautiful thing. Oh, man, thank you. You know what the beautiful thing for me is like when I get up in the morning to go to work and I got that show loaded and I want to listen to it again, it's like that's my favorite drive to work.
Oh, yeah. I love it, man. Try to talk to your boy Mac 611 about doing that, too.
Oh, we'll do it.
Because me and him always getting at it. I'm like, dude, listen to your shows. I know every syllable I've ever uttered on a show.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to all of them.
Yeah, so
that's how you learn.
Mine and yours.
Yeah,
to be honest with
that's
you.
How you learn. You learn through just listening and seeing. Well, man, maybe I should have did this. Maybe I could have did that. And that's how you get better.
Oh,
you know, don't just throw up the ball and just walk away like it's gonna be an automatic three.
Or the like you Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Yo, I can go on a binge, I'm not even going to lie to you, bro. I can go on a binge if I'm going out of town and listen to like five past shows of mine, just one after another,
yeah.
Be taking down notes and stuff like that. Like, it's not vanity, but you just, you know, you're always looking for an edge and a way to get better.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's your learning. You're listening and seeing how you executed things and saying, well, how can I do this better? What did I do right? What did I do wrong? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it shows, because your shows are tight.
Thanks, brother. Likewise.
You know, the structure of them is structured well, and it has a structure that's familiar, so that way people know, you know, you're training people to listen.
Right. Right.
And it's beautiful, man. I love it.
Thanks, brother. All right, well, we're going to close out, big brother. Thank you for coming through.
No doubt.
Brothers and sisters, we thank you for your time and attention. We hope and pray you got something out of what we had to say today. Salaam alaikum, Hotep, peace, black African power.